If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or in Clomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or in Clomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Paul McCleese, how's it going this week, man?
It's going good. Since the last show, I have seen Alien Romulus. I have I saw Beetlejuice with the lady friend.
Okay.
The new Dafoe, very good. Yes, so I saw the original twice, and I fell asleep both times. You know, not really my kind of movie, but Willem Dafoe really, really performed. Made my girlfriend very happy to see the movie. So, fellas, recommended. Good movie to take a girl to.
Good. Willem Dafoe's great in everything.
Yeah. Alien Romulus was also quite fun. I really liked it stylistically, especially towards the beginning. I think the scenery is all very good. Pretty immersive. Highly recommended. And then also, since the last episode, Sam, I've kept you very, very up to date on this, but I have completed Final Fantasy X.
Applause for Final Fantasy X, everybody. Not only did Paul complete Final Fantasy X, he was so far up that game's ass. He got like all the ultimate weapons.
Yes.
All the secret summons and all the extra Final Fantasy stuff that just takes so much time. I mean, you just Gideon. So you probably don't know, but in Final Fantasy X, there's one of the ultimate weapons is only achieved by dodging 200 lightning bolt attacks in a row, and you can't miss any of them. And Paul got it.
Damn. I just didn't want the game to end. And so I got to, you know, the final boss battle, and then I was like, well, wait, hold on. Maybe I should get the ultimate weapons. Maybe I should make sure I have all the summonings. You know, it'd be really cool to do, like, finish this, you know, arc of the game or something like that. And then one day, I think it was last Friday morning, I woke up and I was like, I'm not going to work today. I'm going to beat Final Fantasy X.
Living the dream.
Final Fantasy X, yes.
Yeah. How long, how many hours did you play, Paul?
I think just under 70 hours, I think, total. Damn.
Okay. Wow, that's awesome.
How much of that was extra? Like, how much of that do you think you could have just done the main quest in, like, 30?
I probably... So, this was my first time playing the game since I was a kid. if I'm being realistic, I probably spent maybe, like, 15 to 20 hours doing the extra stuff. If I'd tried to just beat the main quest, it probably still would have taken me, like, 50 hours.
Well, okay. Well, good for you, dude. I'm glad you finally got back around to it. You guys already heard from him. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's going good. Yeah, I've just been bouncing around, playing lots of different games. Forgive me, I've committed a gamer sin. I've gotten back into Fortnite because they have some really cool Dr. Doom stuff going on. I'll share a clip later, but I was able to, like, in a match, get, like, the powers of Doom, and there was, like, a full-on cutscene. It gave me, like, 500 shields, 500 health, and I was able to just nuke everybody and secure the W, and that was sweet. So, and it was, like, victory Von Doom. So there's tons of cool stuff that's been going on with that. I've been honestly blown away at how much fun I've been having with that. Almost done with Elden Ring. I'm in the crumbling Ferrum Azula dragon place, whatever
yeah,
it's called.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
I think I accidentally lit the Erd Tree on fire.
Yeah, yeah, that'll happen.
Okay, is that like supposed to happen?
Did you do the Ranni questline? Are you going for the Ranni ending?
I finished the Ranni questline.
Okay.
And I did some of the Volcano Manor stuff, but I don't know if I did all of it.
Okay. All right. Cool enough. Well, good. So you're almost done with Elden Ring. That's cool.
Yeah.
I got to get around to doing the DLC on that, but yeah, awesome. And last but certainly not least, Alex Princeton, how's it going this week, man?
It's going pretty good. It's a very busy time at work, kind of living the corporate dream right now. And I just noticed that my dog popped my little toy basketball for my door-mounted basketball. Since the podcast started, and I stopped looking at him for 2 minutes.
Well, he thinks he's Air Bud.
Well,
trying out for the
Nuggets. He does love to play with a full-size basketball. He chases it around.
Nice.
What a chad. Well, I'm glad Rudy's doing good. My cats have never done anything that athletic in their entire lives. Actually, Virgil has a new thing. You know how like cats will like lick their paw and then like clean themselves, right? Virgil has a new thing where he's gotten so lazy that I'll stick my hand in front of him. He'll lick my hand and then expects me to do the the combing of his hair for him, which of course I do because I'm nice. But he's such a lazy fat ass, but I love him anyway. Okay. So, well, I guess I should catch you guys up on what I've been doing. Yes, I also saw Alien Romulus. I got and finished in Platinumed Astrobot. I've been playing nothing but Astrobot the last couple weeks. And that's been totally awesome. I started and finished almost in like 2 days a new playthrough of Alan Wake, which I really, really enjoyed. And the other night, Paul and I sat down to play Symphony of the Night and ended up going through the first half of the game in like 3 hours.
I love that game.
Me too. Well, yeah, obviously. It's like, you know, just the best 2D game ever. And so I'm in the second half of the castle now. I'm in the inverted castle. And I've probably got like 2 or 3 good hours left. And I got to grind for that, you know, the sword that hits like a million times a second. I got to go grind for that thing. But other than that, I'm almost done with 16 of the night. I don't know if I'm going to play through it as Richter, but we'll see. I've never gone for the Richter run before, so we'll see where it takes us.
So I don't know if this is going to ruin anything for you. I've tried to play through as Richter. You don't really play through the story as Richter. You just kind of are like let loose in the castle to do whatever you want.
Right.
I don't know what like a Richter run really entails or if that's something the community has invented, but I don't know.
The only caveat I have about playing as Richter is like the game is clearly not designed around him. Like late in the game, you're supposed to be able to like use Alucard's bat power to like fly around and stuff. And when you're playing as Richter, you have to do these like crazy uppercut moves to like glitch your way through the castle.
I didn't even know you could
do all this stuff. Yeah. You have to do all this crazy shit. So anyway, we're here to talk about Pentiment Act 3. Over the last couple months, we've all been progressing slowly through the game. We finally all finished Pentiment, so we're here to talk about all the secrets that were revealed. And I can't wait to listen back to the previous episodes to figure out how wrong we were about some stuff and how right we were about other stuff. Starting with the, it's the opposite of burying the lead. I guess I'm digging up the lead. A couple weeks ago when we did Act 2, Alex Princeton, you put in the chat that like your suspicion that it was going to be like the statue in the meadow was actually going to be of Mars or something like that. And I'm proud to say you totally nailed that one. How does it feel to be totally right about where this game headed in the end?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say that I picked up on all of the conspiracy details, but as kind of a, I don't want to overstate this, but I'm like very interested in European history and language. You know, I have that background, the major in modern language. And so I'm always keeping an eye out for like words and how they evolve. And there was something about St. Moritz and Tassia that like, I was like, oh, are these actually, because they kept referring to Mars as well as you got deeper. And there was another, the nymph, Tassia and Satya. You know, I was like, oh, those kind of sound similar. So that kind of clued me in. And I think there are just a few other like subtle little hints. Also, I got a scene in Act Two I don't think any of you got, where Otto says that he found the head of the statue.
Right.
That made me think like, what is going on with the statue? So I think those are the two things that kind of clued me in. And they talk a lot about the dark history of Tassian and how it has something to do with the Romans. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? What could that possibly mean? You know?
Well, and I think even it's not a downright spoiler, but it's clear even in Act One that the theme of the game is going to be that, yes, this is a Christian monastery town now, but it has been many things over its past, and it will be many things over its future. And that ends up being the ultimate theme and the ultimate, I don't want to say lesson, but kind of what you're just trying to take away from the game. It becomes much less about the murder as it goes on, and more about those kind of overarching other thematic stuff, I would say. And we'll get into that. I think you expressed some level of disappointment to me over how railroaded you felt. Do you want to go into that like a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious how everyone else feels. I think, you know, I probably had successively less fun as each act went on. I thought Act One was probably the most fun and the most open. Mm-hmm. Act Two was almost as fun as Act One, and it still felt like the choices I made in Act One had some influence on Act Two. Like, increasingly, though, in Act Two, there are things that I wanted to do that were just off limits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, I felt exactly the same way.
And then in Act Three, like, you're basically just, it becomes almost like an interactive story. Like, the only things your choices impact in Act Three, as far as I can tell, are like what mural you ultimately paint.
I think obviously I agree. I mean, it's evident that the game becomes more linear as it goes on. I'm not sure that it is unintentional. Like, I think it's part of the story that they're telling, that like, I think they intentionally lead you into thinking that at the beginning, oh, it's this big open thing. But again, like, even during our Act One podcast, I think many of us were saying like, they've presented me with three choices of who to frame for this crime, and I don't think any of them are the person, but I can't choose, sir, I don't think anybody did it. You have to condemn people, and same with Act Two. Like, Act Two almost feels, I commented a lot in the second podcast about like how I had this very negative feeling toward the end of Act Two, because I felt like, at this point, it's really obvious that none of these people are really doing this crime. There's this puppet master in the background, and they're not going to let me do anything about that until the end of Act Three. So, yeah, I think there is this like purposeful negative feeling of like the control being ripped away from you. And what starts off being a choose your own adventure game really just becomes the story that Josh Sawyer wanted to tell about like religion over time and people over time and how areas adapt and how religion turns into different things over the years. I mean, I thought it was really cool, but I can understand somebody being disappointed that it became less of a game as it went on, and it became more of a visual novel.
I want to say one more thing, and then I'm curious what Paul thinks, and obviously you want to turn it over to the rest of the group. But in addition to like choices you make in the game that don't feel meaningful, I think you like also are encouraged to make choices about your character, and those also feel increasingly less meaningful as the game goes on. You know, I'm just thinking like in Act Three, you know, you can kind of like flirt with your crush basically, and insist over and over that you want to stay in town. You inevitably leave town no matter what you do, right? Yes. Like, I don't know what. So why did it, why hinted all those like choices I could make? You know,
I think
there's things with Andreas that goes beyond to me, like creating a sense of doom and lack of control. To me, it just feels like we didn't want to write more endings to the story.
It's like they didn't want to sacrifice the story that they had for some potentially less interesting outcome that you could have, you know, at least been.
Is it kind of like the Witcher versus Skyrim thing where the Witcher is more compelling because it's more specific and there's less choice, but you're inherently, I mean, the Witcher does a better job of like letting you actually make the choices, frankly.
Yes, but I don't think the Witcher has any quest, any single quest that is as long as Pentiment, you know, aside from the main quest, which is incredibly linear, right? There are no choices to be made in like the main quest of The Witcher 3, right? So like, it's the same thing that is like always a problem with these kinds of games. It's like, do you want the good tailored story or do you want the mediocre story that you got to pick some things through? And like, I don't know. I think like in this game, we kind of got both of them. Like I really, in terms of gameplay, I never enjoyed Pentiment more than I did in Act 1. I thought Act 1 was awesome. And Act 2 was like a little less for me. And then I enjoyed Act 3 because of like where the story ended up going was really interesting. But it, like in terms of gameplay at that point, it was just a visual novel. You know, it was like, whatever. Gideon, I want to get you in here. How'd you feel about all this?
Yeah, I want to touch on what Alex was talking about with like kind of, it does feel almost like your choices aren't as meaningful. But it does lead to a lot of like small permutations throughout the story. Like I, you know, encouraged I forget the guy's name, but he'd been trying to get married for like years and he went off and got married, and I think I was
friendly.
Did you
see him and his kids during the credit sequence?
Yeah, I did the same thing.
So.
Yep.
I don't really remember honestly what the
can I say one thing about the credit sequence before you go on is you guys know Smokey's weird friend who's talking about like all this esoteric magic and all this like crazy shit. In the end credits of the game, that guy's being like burned at the stake for being a witch. I fucking laughed so hard.
Sam, I did something else there. I encouraged a little girl to listen to him and pay attention to Vasquav, and then she burned at the stake with him.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
I was like, yeah, he has some interesting ideas. And then,
whoopsie daisy. Anyway, sorry, Gideon. Go ahead.
No, that you're fine. Like it definitely felt that it's like, yeah, you can make choices, and they may not really seem like they matter, or you're not really going to get all the answers you want. Like it really wasn't straying from that golden path narrative. But it was interesting thinking about. It's just like the way it is like a slow almost like story that kind of cooks over time as you just play and experience like these years and stuff that go on. It was really interesting just seeing how those small kind of literally just dialogue chatting with different people, how you were able to affect this very lived in world, I felt like. And interesting thinking about like what I would do differently on like a second playthrough based on what I experienced. I don't know. It was really, really interesting. I really liked it. And I felt like it had some really powerful moments. And I do think that Act 3 got a bit long in the tooth. And I know when we started, we said it was a bit of a shorter game, like 14 hours? My Switch said it took me 20 hours to beat this. So I was curious how long you guys played it. But yeah, I guess that's my top level thoughts for now.
Yeah, I'd have to look back at my playtime on the PlayStation C. I did redo Act
19 hours for me. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I was under the impression it was a little shorter than that as well, but
yeah,
I agree that Act... I don't know if I've talked to anybody about this game who didn't say that Act 3 felt a little bit long.
Mm-hmm.
Especially by that point, you're being very railroaded into, like, and it's just a visual novel at that point. Around the time the Christmas party rolled around, everybody I feel like has been like, okay, let's wrap this thing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did really like the Christmas party though.
Yeah, I liked it. I like cutting the cookies. I got the trophy for cutting.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the cookies. I was like, I'd been playing it felt like 5 hours that day, just really trying to get through to beat it to get on the podcast. And I was like, I was trying to do the cookies and I kept fucking it up. And then she'd be like, oh, are you done? Like, is that enough cookies? And I was like, fuck it. Like, it's fine. Like, here's a couple cookies. Yeah. And then, like, literally everybody brought up the cookies at the end. It was so infuriating. They were like, oh, wow, these cookies are really great. But, yeah, we couldn't give them to our kids because there wasn't enough. And then, like, you know, all these people are doing this. And then even my fucking dying dad is like, well, nobody even brought me a cookie. And then he fucking died. I was like, what the hell is this shit? I was like, God. I was like, this ending is stinging so much more because I fucked up the cookie minigame.
Did anybody suspect Father Thomas as being the string puller?
No. I thought the doctor, honestly, he was such a bitch. But
yeah, he was an asshole for sure.
You know what? So
they were like planting string pullers like the doctor. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I was gonna say I did not suspect Father Thomas, but I did for a moment suspect that maybe the nun who was trapped in that room or keeping herself like in quarantine in that room for her whole life, like she had something to do with it. But I did not expect that it was like Father Thomas using her and you know, going out and committing the acts himself in tandem. No.
I think that I said in the second podcast that I thought that she had something to do with it. Like, I didn't think that she was committing the crime, but she was certainly like part of the larger puzzle. And I think I said that I was pretty sure it had something to do with the aqueducts, which ended up being true. But I had no inkling that it was Father Thomas. I don't know why I suspected him, because once they reveal that it is him, his motives are completely understandable and very like A to B to C. You know, mm-hmm. it makes a lot of sense, but for like, it's just hiding and please, like one of the very first people you talk to in the game, and you just never really suspect him for some reason. I don't know. Like, they did a really good job at hiding that, and it didn't end up be some like, it wasn't some, you know, it's not like we got to the last hour of the game, some crazy fucking demon came out of the woods, and like, it was just this like total craziness. It was one of the town members. I was really convinced that it wasn't going to be one of the town members.
What'd you guys think about the robot fight?
Yeah, dude, the parry mechanic. Pretty unforgiving. And when we were going through the aqueduct, it's revealed that Andreas is actually still alive, which I think was like somewhat obvious. You're going through the aqueduct, and then there's this like scene where he's like going back into his dreams and you're navigating the labyrinth again. I was sure we were going to come out of that labyrinth and then like he was going to be like standing over somebody like with a knife and he had actually been the killer the whole time. And it actually kind of ended up being more interesting than that. Like finding the sister who'd been locked away and then Father Thomas down in the, what did they call it? The like the old Roman sanctum or whatever was like super interesting, or the old Roman bathhouse. Mm-hmm. I was pretty shocked and satisfied by the ending, and I was impressed that it was somebody that we knew and it wasn't like a cop out. It was very, very well done. Any thoughts on Father Thomas and what ended up being the actual?
Once that whole sequence kicks off after the party, I feel like that is where the whole story really comes together in such an awesome way. Mm-hmm. When he's having the flashbacks of like regrets over his life, just the way Andreas looks in Act 3, I think mm-hmm. he looks super cool. Like finally seeing the purple lettering being like scrawled yeah. out in front of you, like that was awesome, and mm-hmm. it was just so gorgeous to look at and everything. It just everything felt so textured, and it was crazy just thinking back on almost in like a Red Dead sense of like these characters and how much they've experienced over all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I finished it, I think it's going to be a very interesting game to revisit at like different times in my life, just like over the years. Mm-hmm. Because it, I mean, even the way it plays out with like his life, his, you know, youth and then getting married and old age and all that.
Yeah, it's an incredibly mature game from that perspective. And it seems like what I read about it is that Josh Sawyer actually pitched this game back in the 90s. And they could never get funding for it, and they, you know, nobody wanted to do a point-and-click adventure game based in the 14th century Bavaria, so they just put it on hold forever, and they finally got the chance to do it, and I'm really glad they did. It seems like it was just a total dream project for that team. You know, it's not very often that you play a game where the characters are fleshed out in a way where they say the sign of a good character is being able to imagine what they would be doing in their free time if they weren't currently on screen. And I think that that's true of a majority of the characters in this game. I think back of like, I could name 10 to 15 characters where I know what they do in their free time. I know what they're like. I could describe them without describing what they look like or what their role in town is. You know, I could like really give you a description of their personality. And you just don't see that in that many games. You know, it's largely games written by Obsidian or BioWare, you know, those kind of teams. Was anybody shocked when Andreas showed back up?
I was a little surprised. I feel like I didn't fully see that coming, but I was getting the inkling like, yeah, we didn't see his body. He's got to be alive.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Did you guys read the ending this way, that Father Thomas is the one who killed the Baron, the rich Baron, but he was not actually the person who killed Otto? Is that how you guys read the ending?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Same.
Is it super clear? Is it super clear that he didn't, that, or is it more like one of those people definitely did kill the Baron, but
right,
he like instigated everything?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Like the way I remember reading it, and the only reason I'm asking is because now I like there's certainly a doubt in my mind. And what I remember reading is that he did kill the Baron, but he merely instigated the attack on Otto, and it could conceivably be one of the people that you framed for it. One of those people did actually do it. Thomas is not the person who pulled the thing and crushed Otto with the bricks.
Do you remember who the candidates were for Otto? Refresh my memory.
It was the innkeeper's wife, Martin Bauer, maybe one other person.
One of the monks. You could frame one of the monks.
Oh, brother. Yeah, Father Guy.
Yeah, Brother Guy.
Okay, yeah.
I honestly, I need to review this more closely, Sam, but I almost had it as the reverse, like...
That he didn't kill the Baron.
He did not personally kill the Baron, that he set someone up to do it. That's how I interpreted things. In fact, I don't know, it's interesting. You ask him about it, and the detail I do remember is that he says he did not mean to kill or even mortally wound the printer.
It is my understanding, and from what I'm seeing on Reddit, it says, in the climax of Act 3, it's revealed that Father Thomas is the Threadpuller who orchestrated the murders of Rothvogel, the Baron, and Otto Zimmermann, and personally committed the assault on Klaus Drucker. So he did.
He did not commit those first two murders. He orchestrated them. He pulled the strings, but someone else did.
Okay. Right. Okay.
And then he did not intend to kill. The way he says it, he's like, I didn't mean to kill your father. Mm-hmm. I hoped to scare him, and I didn't expect him to like be there. And I didn't intend to kill him when I hit him. That's what he right. said.
And his whole thing about of scaring, what was his motive for scaring Klaus?
Yeah, gosh.
Of all people.
Klaus was going to paint a mural that shined a light on
the history,
okay. Of the town and the nature of the, what do you call it, the revolt.
Right, okay. Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Yeah, wild shit. I kind of had that reverse, but yeah. I mean, I was just like reading so much at the end, you know, you get tired after a while. What else do we want to go into about the kind of that last act here? I liked playing as Magdalene. I thought it was like, I always think it's interesting playing as a I'm going to sound like really like I'm writing an IGN article here. I like playing as an actual well-written female because it gives you a different perspective on the shit that you don't go through in your everyday life. Like I always give the example of the first Horizon game. There's a scene in Horizon 1 where you're being hit on by like two different guys in like a kind of a BioWare conversation tree kind of interface. And I remember that being so novel, being like, oh, I'm playing as a female that's getting hit on right now. Like, this is an experience that, like, me as a guy that I don't really have. This is, like, really weird and awkward, but it's, like, novel and interesting, right? Same with playing as Magdalene and, like, dealing with Otto hitting on you all the time. It's just, like, interesting writing. And I don't know. I thought that was a cool, interesting perspective to play as Magdalene for the final act. It kind of broke things up in a nice way, I think.
And I want to mention, especially with Act 3, like it is definitely slow at times and can feel like a chore to get through compared to the first two acts. But Act 3 and the whole story itself, it feels like if you know, love art or feel like you're an artist yourself, this feels like a love letter to those types of people. And it does feel like you're kind of trudging along at times. But when you finally get that, you know, the whole game's in 2D, and then it finally pulls out back to the main menu in the full 3D of literally all your hard work of, you know, planting these seeds of the story and, you know, encouraging this character to go, you know, ask that girl out that he had a crush on or whatever, and encouraging so-and-so to do art. And all these little things, all these little threads, just connecting and shooting off and everything, like this big story tree, you know, literally that you get to see. It was just really satisfying just from a narrative video game sense. Like, and yeah, I do think it'll be really interesting replaying it and even just comparing. It's been cool comparing the different ways that we've all played. Because, like, in Paul, in your game, didn't Caspar survive, I guess?
No, Caspar. So I was complaining during the last episode that Caspar is annoying and there's nothing you can do to get him killed. But he actually, it's revealed in Act 3. In my game, it was that he didn't survive the fire.
Okay.
But am I the only one who got that? No, I think you, no, we, Caspar died for all of us, I think.
Did he die for you, Gideon?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I was really friendly with him too, so I thought it'd be the opposite for you.
I was a dick.
I've done a little post-reading, and if you are mean enough to Casper, he leaves and doesn't come back for you and survives.
Huh. I guess I wasn't mean enough, but I generally chose the negative options when interacting with him. I was a pretty harsh master to him.
Interesting.
Now, hard times create strong men. This sort of thing, right, Paul?
Yeah, not Casper, though.
Would you guys rank your enjoyment of the chapters? Like, did everybody here enjoy Act 1 the most?
Yeah.
Universally?
I think I maybe liked Act 2 the most.
Okay. Why would you say Act 2 more than Act 1?
I love how depressed Andreas is. I love how it's like, you know, he was kind of apprehensive about his future in the first one, but kind of excited about, like, you know, okay, maybe this marriage will be good and da-da-da. And like going off to do more work, but then he's like, God, all my clients suck, and my son died, and I see him every night in my dreams. Like, I was like, this shit is really heavy, and really, it was really cool. And the whole game does it, but like how much you get to see into his psyche in a visual way, like with the maze, or like when his like mind palace is like crumbling in the end.
I maybe also like Act 2 best. I think it's like the first inclination that you really get that, like, oh, there's more going on here. Like, when you first go into the aqueduct, it's like, oh, shit, you know?
Yeah.
And you can, like, you come up underneath all these different places in the world, and you're like, I don't know. And then I think in Act 3, you almost see too much, where they don't preserve that like mystery. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like kind of a fine line. Act two shows you just enough to like get the gears turning. It's kind of like when X-Files jumps the shark.
Okay.
Interesting. If you guys ever watch X-Files.
I'm familiar with X-Files because Grace is obsessed with it, but I've never sat down to watch it. But
very briefly, X-Files like starts by hinting at this like larger mystery, and then the show just goes on too long and they have to connect the dots, and in connecting the dots, they like reveal they had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah. I do agree that I think that in Act 1 and Act 2 there was this like this sense of there is something built underneath the town of Tassing, and there's this like greater mystery to be solved. And once you actually solve it, it's almost more is pedantic the right word? It's almost more pedestrian than what you had built up in your mind.
Right. Whatever was there could never have like lived up to your
imagination. Right. You know, it's kind of like
I don't want to undersell it. I think it was a cool twist, and it was cool. You know, it just maybe Act Two, like you get to a little more of the mystery.
Right. You know, there was another game that did this to me where, you know, like what you build up in your mind is like, so, you know what it is? It's Gone Home. Have you guys played Gone Home?
No, Alyssa's played it. I need to beat it.
Okay. So like Gone Home, if you haven't played it, is like a very, very short narrative adventure game where it's like this girl coming home from college and it's like thunderstorming outside and her family is not there. And she's like reading notes from her, you just like investigate the environment and you're trying to find out like where your sister went off to that night or whatever. And the game leads you down this path of thinking that this is going to end up being a horror game because you're like reading you're picking up newspapers that are like, oh, local ghost story or blah blah blah, you know, the famous ghost of, and you're reading about ghosts, and then you go down to the basement and there's even more shit about ghosts, and you're just like, you're alone in this house and there's a thunderstorm outside. Like, you build it up so much in your mind, and then the game has no supernatural element at all, actually, and it's just something like you've built up for yourself. That's kind of how Pentiment started to feel to me toward in Act One and Act Two. There was this like huge buildup of there's going to be this crazy supernatural shit going on, and it was just kind of more, it was more human but more depressing, you know, because it's like these are the things the humans are capable of, you know. There isn't some boogeyman, you know, really. I think I kind of agree with you that Act One and Act Two are stronger because they've maintained more of the mystery. But I don't think Act Three is really weak. I just think it may be a little long in the tooth.
I was disappointed a bit by Act Three because I felt like the reason Act Three felt as long as it did is because it felt like 60% of that chapter was just like listening to everybody regurgitate everything that you just played in the last two acts of the game. And because they're explaining it to Mary, but I get why that's technically necessary. But at the same time, I don't need to have all this information fed back to me. I just played it. And a lot of the game is just going over what happened, and a lot of Act Three is just going over what happened in Act One and Two.
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
I think what they're trying to do is to like give you a sense of how every different person in the town reacted. It's like, oh, there's all sorts of, oh, your actions had different consequences for different people, and you wanted to help this person, but look how you hurt that person. It's just that in practice, like, you can anticipate all of these you know what I mean? It's like none of it's that surprising, and you just did all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I get what they were trying to do. I land with Sam that I think like it's still pretty well told. I'd give Act Three like a B+. It's just.
Oh, I mean, and also compared to what, right? I mean, like compared to every other video game, the storytelling in Pentiment is fucking out of this world.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, like real media.
Right, yeah, it's like a real story from like actual like a novel or literature or an art or a movie.
Yeah, none of it's cheesy. Like most video games, when they try to do this, they wind up being like really cheesy or dumb. So,
I mean, most video game storytelling is fucking awful. And when a video game tries to make you make a choice, it's like do I want to kill all the babies or do I want to save all the babies and give them all ice cream? It's like, do you want the red ending or the blue end? It's just like the stupidest shit ever. Pentiment did it in a way that was like way cooler. And honestly, like the subject matter, I think just inspires that sort of thing. You know, it's I think easier to make a game with morally gray choices in a setting that isn't so wild and fantasy. You know, it's not like BioShock right now. BioShock almost like lends itself to these like way over the top moral choices that in retrospect seem a little bit silly. But something like Pentiment is so much more grounded. I think my favorite act is still Act One because it's still so fresh. And I think the mystery is the most compelling in that first chapter. And many, I think of the most striking visual and audio cues, the moments in the game exist in that first chapter. Like the first time you walk into the church and the monk is like singing the Gregorian chant and it's got all this like reverb on it. Like that was the moment I was like, this game's going to be fucking sick. Or like when you're getting interrogated by the archbishop and there's the painting of the duel of death in the background, like, or like watching the first person just get executed by sword in the very end of the chapter. Like all that shit was just phenomenal. And I don't think the game ever like really hit those highs again. But that isn't to say that I didn't like it. I just like Act One the most.
Yeah, this brings me back to something Gideon said about the game sort of being like a love letter to artists and artistry and the details. I think there's something to that, Sam. Like the moment with the monks, the monk singing only really shines out because there's almost no music up to that point, right? And then all of a sudden you hear music. It's like, oh, that's kind of how the world was, right? It was quiet until you went somewhere where there was music. And similar for, you know, the paintings stand out because everything else is pretty naturalistic and bland. I will say in Act Two, and I think Paul got this moment too, there were a few moments that I thought replicated Act One. I know when you go and feed the monks in the tower and you encourage the one monk to sing, there's like a beautiful cinematic where all the monks like join in song.
I didn't see that. I'm going to look that up.
Sat down for a meal and like, the emphasis on like the meaningfulness of mealtime, you know, that's totally lost. I think
the meals were a great addition to this game. Whoever thought that one up, that is a great idea. Not only the like context you get from like sitting down for a meal in medieval times, but what it tells you about all the people that you're eating with. Right. And like you go over to the Druckers, not the Druckers, the redheaded family. And they don't have anything, but they've got it. They don't have enough bread for everybody. But you, as the guest, you get some bread. And not ill Peter, but old Peter is like, or the middle Peter is like, I'll be damned if I can't. If I'll be damned if people in this town say I can't feed my guests. Or
did you eat with the pagans in the forest?
Yeah.
They give you like almonds, like a little cup of almonds. Like that's it. I think like some jerky and some almonds is what they give you, if I remember right.
You know what? I'll shoot you next, Princeton. But what was anybody? The biggest shock in this game to me was that Ill Peter was still alive in Act Three.
Yeah,
dude. Like they're like, oh yeah, go talk to Ill Peter. I was like, that guy is still alive. He's like 102 or something. You know.
I didn't anybody actually else? Have it. I must have missed signal.
Oh okay. Was anybody else like just blown away that Ill Peter was like still alive? Just looked like a total zombie.
Isn't that midwife is also very, very old at the end?
Who is
the midwife?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of interesting. I think one of the ways that your choices do affect the end of the game is like your choices in Act One and Act Two definitely seem to determine like who's alive still.
Mm-hmm.
So Otto always dies. Yeah, I don't know what would it have been like. Let me just game this out a little bit. In Act One, you can kill the nun. But if you don't kill her, then in Act Three, she runs off with one of the priests and marries him. And they live together in the forest.
What does Lucky do? because I killed Lucky in Act 1, and I think I'm the only one who did.
Lucky's like, just still around. He didn't do anything too interesting. I was curious, did anyone not kill Guy?
I didn't kill Guy.
I think Guy dies no matter what.
I guess he was gone, right? In Act 3?
No, the Guy... To Paul, no, you don't have to kill Guy no matter what. Like, I didn't even know that Guy was an option in Act 2.
What does he do in Act 3?
I don't remember. He wasn't around, I don't think. Because, all the monks are gone because they've been replaced by the...
Oh, yeah.
But you could have killed Martin Bauer. I none of those characters. I guess I'm trying to think if like leaving anyone alive had a big impact on the story. I think it's just more like they're still there and you see how their lives went on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I don't like Act 2 quite as much as Act 1, is the death, especially at the end, feels so much less consequential. I don't know if it's like the manner in which they die, but like in Act 1, when they get executed, it's like you feel it. You're like, I caused this, right? But in Act 2, it feels almost more incidental. Like it's just the fire happens.
Also, like 20 other people die immediately after like the one person that you condemned. So it's like in Act 1, the Baron is murdered, and then you put someone to death.
Mm. Yeah. Do you guys have a Pentiment crush? Like, you know, you're gonna wife one of these characters.
Mother Illuminata.
Yeah, she's hot. I have a look here.
Yeah,
do you guys have any romance scenes throughout the game? Anybody?
I don't think I did.
No. I felt it was kind of weird. Maybe I'm the only one who felt this way, but playing as Magdalene, it felt to me like the game was almost trying to like push you to not like Ots, but I really didn't see any reason to dislike him. Like, I obliged most of his I don't even want to say advances. I never felt like he
was forward.
She just like hates that he calls her Mags, which I think is kind of stupid. But so like in the end, like I had Magdalene, like, I guess romance him, but I don't know if any of you guys did the same thing, because she leaves the town no matter what. Mm-hmm. The last conversation they have with each other is her saying like, if you come see me in the town within a year, then I'll marry you. Otherwise I'll know we shouldn't be together. And like, that's that.
Yeah, nothing you did, as far as I could tell, had any impact on that outcome. Because I did the same thing, Paul, and it was frustrating.
Yeah.
Did you guys inform the people of Tassing of what went on, or did you keep them blissfully ignorant?
I definitely let them know.
Yeah. I thought about it for a solid 5 minutes, and I think I eventually let them know as well.
I was like, this shit was fucked, man. It's been a long time coming. I was like, I should know.
My logic was that's exactly what Rorschach does at the end of Watchmen, so I just went with that.
In the Steam games, can you see, like, in retrospect, how many people made the choices you made? The percentile breakdown would be really interesting to me.
I know on PlayStation you can look at the trophies, and you can see it, which percentage of people got which trophies, so that probably be a good way of doing it. Okay.
I should probably say, because I talked about this a little bit in the first episode, but because I didn't know what would eventually happen with Andreas, I was playing the game in a way where I wanted to ingratiate myself with the townspeople while also gaining as much favor as I could within the church, so that I could, like, I thought maybe it would be possible to like rise to power and actually become some sort of influential figure in the town. And then at the end of Act 2, I felt like, okay, all of that was for nothing. I didn't really know what to go into Act 3 for. This was taken into account in my decision to let the townspeople know what had happened, because I just figured at this point I've spent so much time being like man of the people that I'd be amiss not to tell them. But Yeah, but that is just another example, in my opinion, where it's like, I felt like I was working towards something for Act 1 and Act 2, and then it turned out that that's something that I was working towards wasn't even possible. So that was a little bit of a letdown. But yeah.
It's a little disappointing, but did you at least like that you had a very cute baby named after you?
Yes.
The child Andreas is very adorable. And like him painting the, or drawing the pictures on the side of the windmill at the end of the game, I was like, that was as good of an ending as I could have possibly imagined for this game. That was like a nice little way to like wrap this whole thing
together. Is he always named after you, or is that a consequence of you being nice to the young artist?
Oh, good question.
I think it's a consequence of being nice and encouraging his artwork. If I had to guess.
Well, we're coming up on about an hour. We should probably start wrapping things up. I mean, what can we say? Overall, I had a great time playing this game, and I never would imagine myself enjoying a visual novel or like really text-heavy games like this. I think it's testament to the incredible team at Obsidian that they were able to come up with like such a unique idea. I think it's a testament to their publisher, in this case, Xbox Game Studios, who said who greenlit it and said yes. I mean, I'm sure this game cost $20 million to make it. You know, if a big AAA game costs $200 million now, I'm sure this was a tenth of that price, if not less than that. The credits just fly by. You know, it's like 20-25 people worked on this game. Good for them, and they made something really great, something really niche that I don't think made a whole lot of money, but certainly garnered a lot of praise and awards. So
it's gonna be so cool, like, this game standing the test of time, like Pentiment 50 years, and or like in a video game college class or something. I loved also the addition of the bibliography at the end. It reminded me
of
reading like a good Michael Crichton book and then being like, damn, like he's got the scientific journal in here, you know? So that was really cool.
Princeton, you saw the bibliography at the end, right?
Yeah, I'm about 70% through those papers. I've read most of them.
Okay, good.
Damn.
I'm just screwing.
That's impressive.
When they had the bibliography at the end, I was like, that is totally awesome. These guys did their...
They got the receipts.
Yeah, they did their fucking research on this. I mean, Paul, how about you? Any final thoughts?
I'll just say my favorite parts of this game... So it, for the first half of 2020, as an experiment, I kept a dream journal, and I discovered that like 30 to 40% maybe of my dreams were of me discovering or exploring abandoned places. Like I would find like an old mansion, or I would find an old cavern and walk around in there filled with like clay pots and stuff. And my favorite parts of this game were the parts in every single act where you explore something that is abandoned. So in Act 1, you go to the abandoned library upstairs through the secret entrance. And that, like, I felt like that awoke something in me. And then, you know, Act 2, you do the aqueducts. And Act 3, you do the aqueducts. Act 2, you do the underground, what was that?
You do the aqueducts in 2.
I guess you do it in both, but
yeah.
different sections of it. I'm truly envious. I mean, maybe it's not even real, but it's like the idea that there was a time where it's like, oh, underneath the sewers, there's a whole abandoned town that you can just go walk around in or something like that. It's like, man, that...
Isn't that true in parts of Europe, Paul? I mean,
I don't know.
It's just an American thing that there's nothing under our cities.
But isn't it also a testament to like how these people live their lives that they're like, I'm so busy rebuilding this fucking brick wall every day because it keeps flooding that I don't have time to go figure out what is it within walking distance. It's like down in the salt mine that's right over
and
there.
And why would I go down there anyway? It's so dangerous.
Right. You know?
Paul, we just need to go to New York and meet the subway people.
New New York. Any final thoughts, guys, before we wrap it up?
I just want to mention also, like, I really loved how it touches on some heavy subjects. I don't know, a lot of dealing with like family and death and stuff like that, and just how things change over time. And I thought a lot of like when the story wanted to, it was very compelling and heavy hitting with just like some of the reveals or the way it was written or dialogue. Even just like the whole end sequence, like seeing all the ghosts of Andres's regrets and finally seeing the purple script, I was just like spamming the screenshot button. I was like, this game is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm really glad I played it. It was super fun.
Something I think about with it is it's like the kind of game that, like, if I showed this game to my dad would immediately ask me what the object of the game is. Right? He still thinks of like having his Atari, where games came with rule books because video games were like barely, well, they were barely like more than just a representation of an already existing game, like an already existing board game, right? They were still thinking in terms of keeping a score, an object, an ending, winners and losers, and things like that. Like, I wish I could show some like adults older than me in my life, no, this is what games can be now. And it's not all either like Grand Theft Auto or Mario or like a first person shooter or something like that. Like, games have this very broad thing now where it can be all this different shit. And I feel like people don't really get that and don't really understand that. And it's like one of those games you just wish you could like grab somebody and but still they wouldn't even understand it. They'd be like, so you're gonna sit here and read for 5 hours? You know what I mean? Like, just
This is maybe an obnoxious question, but is this obviously and definitely a game?
I think it starts off as being much more of a game than it ends up being. Like, it starts off under being under the guise of a choose-your-own-adventure game, and eventually becomes It becomes like the Josh Sawyer Power Hour, where he's just like, "Here's the story I wanted to tell, and you're going to experience it." In the way that I want you to, and you don't have any choice in the matter.
Yeah,
I still enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But that's kind of where I'm going with that is that I wish like more older people understood, like, no, this is what games can be. I mean, there are games out here like that, and it's so much broader than what you probably think of as being video games. So. I think it's cool for that reason. All right, well, guys, we don't have anything more to add. I think we'll wrap it up. Anybody doing anything fun with the remainder of their evening?
I just realized this podcast is like really a conversation you wish you could have with your dad.
Yeah, well, I keep pitching him to come on to do Rocky, and he doesn't want to do it. I told my mom that. She wants to come on and do the Nick Cage movie Con Air.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen it.
I've never seen it either. she has seen Con Air, no doubt, like 20 times. She loves Con Air. So,
Damn, if you get your mom on to watch Con Air or do Con Air, I will watch it.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll work on him. So next week we are doing Double Indemnity at Gideon's request. You all are welcome. It's just not a very long movie. It's from like the 1940s, I think. Okay. Who knows who it is after that? I think it's Neil after that.
Is it available on any platform?
I think it's on Max, if you have Max.
Yeah, I got Max.
I'll check real quick.
It's older than Dinosaur Dirt, and I'm sure you could pirate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. At some point, don't movies enter the public domain? I mean, probably you could like get it for next to nothing, I'm sure.
It says it's not streaming, but okay. At least according to IMDb. But
last thing before we go, I'm thinking about like the last time we did the podcast, it was 1917, and I felt like I brought a really bad pick, not because it was a bad movie, but it just there was no interesting discussion to be had about 1917. And so I've been trying to figure out a way to like redeem myself. Do you guys know anything about the movie called Audition?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Don't look it up.
I think I know about it.
Okay. What do you know about it, Gideon?
Lots of torturous things, let's say.
Yeah.
I feel like I listened to a podcast about it like years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, I was thinking about bringing an audition, but I don't want to kill Neil. I think Neil will actually drive out to Minnesota and like kick my ass if I pick auditions. So we'll see. All right, guys.
Watching torture. I can't get in. That's like, it's like, you know, we all have our lines.
I'm with you.
I was under the impression that it, like, I don't know how much torture there is in the movie. It's not like Saw or like Hostel or anything like that. Let me put it this
way. If a film about something else critically depends on a 2-minute well-executed torture scene that like drives home a point, I could watch it. I don't know why these balloons. but I will not watch Salad. I will not just watch like people be tortured for an hour.
Oh yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't same. Do that.
I'm it's right like, there with you.
It's fucked up. All right, guys. Well, on that happy note, I don't know how you got the balloons. I think you can get the fireworks by doing this, right? Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, guys. Yeah. I will see you guys at a later date.
Have a good one, guys.
Talk, guys.
All right, little boys.
Later.